Hello, everyone. Bienvenidos to InDocuTalks, the podcast created by immigrant youth for immigrant youth, looking at immigration through a lens of news, culture, and education.
Why do a podcast on immigration? My name is Rafael Martinez. Each one of our collective members will tell you why we decided to embark on this journey. The current political moment has brought many challenges to our immigrant communities. Waking up every morning to alarming news, notifications, and messages has been an emotional roller coaster. Living an undocumented life presents us with a unique outlook for the ways in which we critique, analyze, and embody politics. I grew dissatisfied with things I was listening from the conservative right just as much as I did from the liberal left. This feeling of bitterness and stress pushed us to ask ourselves what was missing from the immigrant rights debate. We realized pretty soon that the intellectual voice is what was missing. By intellectual voice, I do not mean an academic commentary, but rather a critical and intersectional voice that questions the political structure that oppresses our communities. We felt that a podcast was the perfect medium to create a counter-narrative. UndocuTalks aims to be a space to share ideas, news, and practice a culture of healing. I bring my passion for immigrant youth movement research along with an extensive organizing experience to this project. I will serve as podcast director in developing themes and topics for the podcast, along with serving as a co-host.
Hola a todos. Mi nombre es Nancy Canales Navarrete. Being a co-host on InDocuTalks has been and will continue to be a growing experience for me. As a DACA recipient, I have been focused on maintaining my permit in order to continue pursuing a degree. I can personally say that my family has grown and become stronger. Stronger because they have become the support system that I needed most. In wake of the most recent election and headlining news across the country, it is important to have people standing in your corner. I wish to share my opinions, my thoughts, and my experiences along with these amazing individuals who are done being silenced.
Coming to you from the 479, this is Frank Berlanga Medina, co-host of the podcast on DocuTalks. Disgusted by the lack of the immigrant voice in the contemporary immigration debate, we started on DocuTalks to create a platform for the immigrant voice to express through their lived experience what it really means to be an immigrant youth in this country. As a co-host, I bring a historical lens that will critique how the narrative around immigration is constructed in the mainstream, thus helping to create counterstories to that narrative.
Saludos a todos. Me llamo Alejandro Mendiaz Rivera, and it's a pleasure to be here on InDocuTalks. To tell you a little bit about myself, I'm an educator at heart, and I have devoted the last 10 years to the University of New Mexico, first as a student and now as a program specialist. I'm passionate about immigration because I lived the last 19 years of my life as an undocumented immigrant, and I tried to make the best of the opportunities presented to me. Since I started my journey at UNM in 2007, I've been involved in my community by trying to improve access for undocumented students to higher education. One of the other things that I've always loved is keeping up with politics and how immigration is affected by our political climate. This is why I joined on DocuTalks. I hope to bring news and information to keep our community up to date on what's going on a national level, and I'm going to be doing so along with my wonderful co-host, Cindy Nava.
Buenas tardes a todos. My name is Cindy Nava, and I am the proud daughter of Mexican immigrants from Chihuahua, Mexico. Being undocumented and having a deep interest in politics placed me in places that I never dreamt of being at, and in situations that were many times difficult to understand. I am passionate about creating education opportunities for the disenfranchised by deconstructing the legislative process and empowering communities and youth to take part of the vital world of policymaking. From interning at the New Mexico Legislature as an undocumented student for 7 years to working as a civic engagement organizer with several organizations within my community, to being an educational research assistant, to becoming the first DACA recipient to serve as an education analyst at the New Mexico House of Representatives, and now as an executive director of a nonprofit focused on standing up for education opportunities through policy change and youth engagement, I can tell you that I am here because I am deeply passionate about creating an open space to diversify our voices and our methods and really honor the work that we're doing and caring across the country around immigration. on DocuTalks, to me, means a creation of a space that carries out the opportunity for respectful conversations that are inclusive of distinctive methods of action for undocumented youth, families, and community. And that is the reason that I am thrilled to be part of a team of individuals who will honor and emphasize the value of diverse methods for immigrant youth and the leaders of tomorrow. Co-hosting besides the one and only Alejandro Mendiaz, I look forward to creating information and distinctive perspectives on immigration through an understanding that can be shared with our friends, families, padres, abuelos, hermanos, y con nuestras comunidades. The type of fighters, they want to bury us and deny us. Our human rights, but they can't see that we are the seeds rooted deep in defiance. Oppressing us with decades of violence, expecting us to live life in silence. But we be up all night with a stereo in the backyard until the sunlight hit in the islands. You just listened to all of our collective members talk about what DocuTalks is, what we aim to do, and what are some of the goals for our show. On this next segment, we're going to be talking about education. And particularly this episode, which is our opening episode, we're going to be talking about what being an DocuScholar means. What are the particular challenges that pursuing higher education brings? And what are the identity markers that we navigate through in identifying as DocuScholar and other identities? We have two important and special guests for today's show, Ana Oaxaca, who is a PhD student at UCLA, and Baji, who's a MA student at Columbia University. And through their contributions, we have a segment that talks about the intersectional and structural issues that we're trying to aim with this show.
What I realized the moment I got to Oxford was that someone like me could not really be part of it. It's the peak of the English education system.
That was Stuart Hall, an immigrant scholar from Jamaica who studied in Oxford during the 1950s. Hall is credited as the founder of cultural studies. His influential work spans over five decades. Hall's efforts to create new paradigms centered on marginalized subjects represents precisely what's at stake for DocuScholars.
By DocuScholar, we mean an individual whose academic and intellectual life is intersected by the legal status they possess that marginalizes them from the mainstream. They bring with them an experience and story that produces new sources of knowledge and ways to critique those structures and investigate new ways and paradigms that operate at the heart of their work. In short, they bring new perspectives to their respective fields of studies by mere virtue of their own personal story.
Let's hear what our interviewees had to say on how they define DocuScholar.
The word scholar means that you study certain things and that you've come up with your own knowledge. You're somebody that studies knowledge of other people and also wants to improve that knowledge in a way. You're a scholar of history, you're a scholar of political science. And to me, being a scholar is really bringing knowledge together to form new knowledge, right? And an DocuScholar, undocumented and a scholar, to me means bringing the knowledge of being undocumented towards academia, a knowledge that is non-existent for the most part because it is so hard to get into a PhD program, and it is much harder for a lot of people that are facing the same barriers to education as undocumented youth. The bottom line is bringing all that you are as undocumented into the world of academia.
I would define an DocuScholar as an undocumented person who uses their personal experience and kind of intimate firsthand knowledge and lived experience as a frame of reference or as a counterpoint from which to understand a world that implicates everybody in these processes of social categorization and formal legal status. I think that perspective is really crucial in an environment like academia, like higher education, places that historically have never prioritized people from marginalized backgrounds, places that historically have kind of depended on the the so-called legal status of people. That's a kind of wall that's only begun to be shedded. You know, grassroots organizing is as something that also in turn shapes the scholarship of undocumented scholars and other sympathetic scholars. The question, you know, why academia is as such, why that fight needs to be had in the first place, why legal status is such a stigmatized, taboo kind of thing, and how all of those things kind of shape community or limit community and the possibilities that we have by interrogating those structures, the possibilities that the very critique of those structures can thereby start to corrode those very things that separate us.
All right, Rafa, based on the interview that you had with Ana Oaxaca, graduating with her political science degree, what can you tell us in terms of what you guys discussed?
Ana had a lot of interesting things to say about her point of view about UndocuScholar. The most important thing that I took away from her interview was that we all have a story to tell, and our points of view come from a point of challenges, suffering, and community growth. And at the end of the day, we have to embrace those things instead of seeing them as a negative thing that we bring to academia. We have to see it as a positive thing that we're going to be able to bring new knowledge formations. And that's such an important message that we want to send out with this podcast. We want to say that as undocumented scholars, we bring unique perspectives and we are building on community knowledge that usually do not get welcome into institutions. Stories like Ana Oaxaca's demonstrate the importance of undocumented scholars being in places of higher education.
Immigrants, we get the job done.
Look how far I come. Look how far I come. Look how far I come.
We get the job done.
Look how far I come. Look how far I come. Look how far I come.
Immigrants, we get the job done.
Well, I've always said I'm undocumented. That was kind of like the chosen word. I ended up kind of reverting back to every time because the word dreamer came from an act, right? And it was an act in Congress, the Dream Act, that was never passing. So the word dreamer was really just a word coming from some other people identifying us, right? So these people that were identifying us as dreamers were legislators, people that wanted to paint us in a picture of having these great dreams and being able to kind of aspire towards them and fulfill them with a piece of, you know, social security card or like a piece of paper. So that to me kind of has evolved into me not using the word too much. So I choose undocumented.
I would identify as undocumented with DACA. I would also identify as Asian American, 1.5 generation. And I think the immigration status definitely influences not only my like worldview, but also my intellectual and scholarly preoccupations. I think everybody in either academics or humanities comes to their subjects of interest from their personal vantage point. I think for myself, that's especially true, just trying to understand my family's history and my own personal history and how that's connected to the world in which I live.
We just listened to the distinct ways in which Ana and Bud decide to identify as. What were some of the things that maybe stand out for you, Frank?
Yeah, I think it's great to point out that Ana chooses to stay away from terms such as dreamer, where that's, you know, politically viable or politically expedient for whatever reason, you know, she chooses to not identify as that. And then Bud being able to say he is undocumented, speaking more towards a permanent status, legal status, being a DACA recipient, which is, as we all know, a temporary legal status that was created by President Obama and the federal program that followed.
And Nancy, I know you noticed a little bit of difference in terms of terminology between DACA, DACA recipient, dreamer. What can you say about these differences that we heard?
I think in terms of Bud and him saying that he's undocumented with DACA simply points out that undocumented is something that he will be. That's something he identifies as, that's who he is. And DACA is simply a form of protection for us who are already undocumented to be able to have these opportunities. And Ana, while she identifies as undocumented as well, she mentions that dreamers is something that came through in terms of a law that was kind of implemented on all of us undocumented students, and it came and was given to us without something that we decided to identify as. And I think it's important that Bud does that for himself because it shows all of us that we can identify as we wish without being given something. You know, it's something that comes from us and what we believe we truly are.
Absolutely. And just to wrap up this section, one of the things that's really interesting also is that Bud decides to identify in terms of his ethnic background and why that's important, right? And I think at the end of the day, we have multiple identities and we must not shy away from those multiple identities. And at the end of the day, the most important thing is self-identification. We can't tell people they're wrong at identifying in a particular way. Now let's hear, what are the particular challenges that pursuing higher education brings? And what are the identity markers that we navigate through in identifying as an undocumented scholar and other identities?
So they called me refugee. They came and took our land, so we all sit out to sea. And then some people come and they help to rescue me.
Being in a PhD program, having DACA and it being my source of employment, and then having that taken away. I'm living in LA now. I have a $1,500 rent to pay. You know what I mean? That things have changed. And getting that thing taken away from you, I think really impacts you so much. So I obviously understand why the Dreamer movement is right now at the center stage of national politics, and everybody is choosing to talk about it. But throughout the immigration debate since the last big immigration legislation at the national level, I think the way that people talk about it is this good versus bad immigrant framework, right? And we've been hearing this a lot lately because, in all honesty, there was many, many points in time where the criminal immigrant was quote-unquote sacrificed to be able to claim other immigrants' rights to be here. And I think that is also a bit problematic, the way that we've been talking about immigrants in general and undocumented immigrants specifically, where we can kind of put them in different groups and then judge on whether they are deserving of being here or not, despite any actual claims that they have to be here in the country and any reasons for which they immigrated.
The issue of undocumented immigration and immigration in general is always represented as strictly a Latino problem or Latinx problem, not only as something like the United States in general isn't implicated in, it's just the problem of Latinos. So that's a problematic kind of assumption that's already made. But within that is other communities, other largely immigrant communities who might not want to collaborate or build with Latino population, might not consider the kind of multiple effects that immigration law has on not just Latino population, but Asian, Black, Caribbean, and so on and so forth. And I think in this time, it's really crucial to question why those connections are missing and to do the work of making those connections. Certain segments of colorism and anti-Latino or anti-Black racism feed into these communities and encourage a kind of divide and conquer sort of sense, an idea that the communities themselves are in this kind of free-for-all battle for self-preservation, when there's a lot of potential for coalition building. And historically, those very methods of coalition building have been the ways in which successful pro-immigration, pro-civil rights measures have been won. Most recently, the undocumented kind of youth organizing has seen some of these kind of identity and community factions played out. UndocuBlack in particular has been doing some really incredible work trying to advance pro-Black immigration politics. And recently, I've seen them collaborate with Asian immigrant groups to try to build kind of a larger stance, because both of those populations are significantly smaller in number than Latino immigration groups. And I think it's important to build those coalitions, but also highlight those smaller organizations.
Welcome to UndocuTalks, a podcast created by immigrant youth for immigrant youth. We are committed to sharing and discussing important topics involving news, culture, and education. Bud is focusing on the intersectionalities that there are involving UndocuScholars. And like you said, there is a brown face to it. A lot of people, when they think about DACA students or UndocuScholars, Hispanics, Latinos, Mexicans, we are kind of the first that come to mind. And I think it's important to note that Budgie has a very different point of view to get across. I mean, Rafa, what do you think that Budgie has that is different?
One of the things that Bud talked about deeply in his interview was precisely immigration often is referred to as a Latino issue. a Latinx, as he also mentions in his interview. And one of the important things to note is we should consider that itself as a Latino person, as a Latino identifying person myself. I see that as a privilege because many of the times other ethnic minorities within the immigrant community get marginalized in these particular ways. And I think Bud mentions this importance and thinking about it from a scholar's perspective, but also from an organizer's perspective. He's been organizing a lot of work at the ground level at Columbia University, but he talks about coalition building between undocumented Black and Asian communities. And I thought that was super important to note that we have many ethnic communities organizing. And if we are not talking about undocumented Black, Asian, and other intersectionalities, even thinking about sexuality, if we're not naming our undocumented queer partners, we're also silencing a lot of those voices. And so part of what we want to do with UndocuTalks is be able to always have an intersectional approach to the way that we talk about the themes and subjects in this show, but also the people that are going to be highlighted in the show, interviewees themselves, we will be thinking about it intersectionally. And Budgie's interview reminds us at the end of the day, we have to be thinking in these particular ways. Soy dulce como el melao, alegre como el tambor. Llevo el rítmico tumbao, llevo el rítmico tumbao de África en el corazón. Welcome to your Undocu News segment with Alejandro Mendiaz and Cindy Nava.
For our first news segment, I'd like to give an unfortunate welcome to our Cuban brothers and sisters into the ranks of communities targeted for deportation. Before January 12, 2017, many Cuban immigrants benefited from a policy dubbed Wet Foot, Dry Foot, which basically allowed undocumented Cuban immigrants the opportunity to stay in the U.S. under parole and eventually naturalize their status.
Right, Alejandro. And since that policy ended, over 37,000 Cubans have been hit with deportation orders, and many less are trying to make their way to the U.S. According to the State Department, immigration from Cuba is down by 64%. So now that we know this, Ale, how do you think this will change the dynamic in the Cuban community in regards to immigration?
Well, Cindy, I think this is really going to change the dynamic from a very conservative tone to a much softer tone. Cuban immigrants have had a very different immigration story from most undocumented youth, especially those of us from Mexico or Central America or South America and other similar parts of the world that don't enjoy this path to citizenship that Cubans traditionally had the opportunity to pursue. I think that this will make Cubans a little bit more supportive to the cause. I think it's important to mention that January 20th, 2018 is the one-year anniversary of the inauguration of President Trump, and the government is shut down.
Absolutely, Alejandro. And, you know, it may be a surprise for some. It may not be a surprise for others. I think we've all seen the kind of administration that has been running since a year ago, and it has in no way improved, gotten better. And seeing it from my perspective, from the immigrant lens, I just think, and I know that it's been a constant fight for us. And, you know, and I think there's so many out there fighting day by day in many different ways, Alejandro, which I think that need to be valued. And what does that mean for those people advocating for DACA right now and for the actions that caused and that led for the government shutdown? So who are the people that we're going to, you know, and who are the guilty ones for the shutdown? Whose votes caused it? All of these concepts, all of these things, we can go on and on about them, on how just the construction of how these things happen. But really, what does it mean to us, you know, as everyday people? So, you know, and what does it mean to us? And for all of those that are worried about, you know, the future of DACA, where does that leave us? I think there's many questions, Alejandro. And I think in the coming days, we're going to see a whole lot of shifts coming through. And we're going to be updating on that, of course. But being at this pivotal time, this pivotal moment, and seeing that our government has been shut down, to me, it's just fact that we see this all the time. There's a lot of stubbornness. There's a lot of my way or the highway. And that my way or the highway takes those who have skin in the game right under. and it runs us over and it runs our families over. And to me, you know, it's important that our voices are taken into account, because I can't tell you, I can't sit here saying that I represent every single DACA recipient, right? You can't do this. You can't do that either. So to me, I think it's extremely important that we take into account the many voices that are not being heard on TV, on podcasts, the people that don't have either the time or really, there's so much fear out there. And, you know, that's something that I know is there, and it's our lives day by day. So not everyone has the ability to have the opportunities and the privileges that we do here sitting in this table. So it is very, I've always thought that it's very unfair that we have people who think that they have the answer for everything and aren't willing to come to a compromise because they are just going to roll with what they want. And if they don't get exactly what they want, they're not going to be willing to do anything.
As of Monday, January 22nd, the government has reopened. In the Senate, only 16 Democrats and 2 Republicans voted to keep the government closed. The new date to try to come up with a compromise on immigration is February 8th.
For this segment, we'd like to say, treat yourself. In this segment, what we really want to do is to bring the ethos of self-care and self-therapy to some of the immense, intense, and hard work that we do as undocumented individuals. So what you will hear is our collective members and what they're doing currently to treat themselves. So remember, treat yourself.
So one of the things that I do to treat myself, and I like to preface this by saying I'm a foodie, and people who know me know that I love food, all kinds of food, and I love trying new food. But one of my getaways is a wonderful taco truck in the South Valley of Albuquerque. And what I do to treat myself is I go get some tacos al pastor with some wonderful salsa de chipotle, extra onion just for Rafa, and I treat myself. And I forget in that moment about politics, I forget about school, I forget about work, I forget about everything going on in my life and just focus on the moment, on who I'm there with, and on enjoying a little piece of my culture, my cuisine, and what I like to do. So if you want to treat yourself, go get yourself some tacos.
I want to go get some tacos now.
Making me hungry.
Never
How
been.
Late are they open?
I know. Oh, that's, what do you do now?
That's fine. That's fine. Some more food.
All right, y'all. So for my treat myself whole ordeal, I like to take a really long shower. More times than I can count throughout the week, my showers are limited to maybe 5-7 minutes tops. And at the end of the week, I like to listen to the music. I listen when I drive in my car and everything else in the shower. And I like to take a really long 30-40 minute shower to kind of distress. I put some essential oils in there and I like to smell it everywhere. And I feel like it's really relaxing. I feel like it's something that I really, really enjoy. So go shower.
Wow.
Jesus. Oh, that was great.
Yes.
Oh my God,
yes. Yes.
Yes. Thanks for the love.
Self-care, guys. Self-care.
So I like to do to treat myself is actually do an activity and do more stuff, but stuff that actually helps me to unplug. So I literally turn off the phone and I take out my guitar and my bass and I noodle from 1 hour to 2 hours on those. And so even though I'm physically doing something and I'm mentally doing something, it actually helps me to move away, because music to me is a big catharsis. So any music that you guys could recommend would be great to listen to be able to treat myself.
One of the things that I do to treat myself is I like to watch documentaries. My partner drills me all the time for watching sad things that are going on in the world. And that's not really unplugging myself, but at the same time, I feel like it is, because I feel like many of these documentaries put things in perspective for me. In particular, one that I would recommend for listeners to check out is Residente's new movie on Netflix, where he essentially does a DNA test and finds out all the different parts of the world that he's from. He travels to these locations and he makes music with people from these locations. And through music, he finds a lot of the things that bonds us as human beings. And he looks at things like war and strife as something that still there's beauty in. And he looks at those devising forces and he eliminates those through something as universal as music. And so for a moment there where I was watching this documentary, it allowed me to escape my own life and escape the fact that I'm not necessarily able to travel around the world physically. But through this documentary, I was able to see parts of the world that I had never imagined. And so that's the power of documentary and media to me. So go watch a documentary.
Thanks.
That wasn't as cool. Sorry.
While you eat some tacos.
Exactly. After a long shower.
After a long shower.
And segue into some music.
So the way that I treat myself, and I mean, you know, I would agree with the whole team over here. I'm all about all the things that they said. But I have a huge interest in just in learning about culture and really about kind of like my ancestors. And I was extremely close to my grandmother, my dad's mom, who passed away last year in my arms. And, you know, that carried a whole lot of meaning for me because she was my motivation. And she was this woman who had a third grade education level. But if you met her, you could have thought she had a PhD. And I have a lot of her things. And this is my yaya. And I love going through her stuff. She was an avid reader. So she was very, very intellectual in all the things that she knew. So I like to go through the books that she read and really, you know, take my time and go through them and see the things that she marked up and read them and share them with my family. And, you know, just family is a pivotal thing for me. So getting to sit down and just look at my yaya's items, her clothing, the things that she told me, and I write them down because I want to keep that history alive, and I want to be able to pass that on to whoever comes after. So to me, it's really about sitting down and remembering those times that I spent with her, and honoring them by writing them down and always keeping them there.
So treat your abuelita good,
please.
So, Freud, what do you usually do to treat yourself?
Yeah, so what I like to do to treat myself is I usually like to go on bike rides and anything that has to do with outdoors. So I kind of just look up a route, grab my bike, make sure everything's running on it. I don't want to have an accident out there, you know, because it's a pretty bad scene out there for cyclists here. And you just got to be prepared. I mean, all you can do is make sure you get everything on your side done and checked and kind of just enjoy the ride.
What about bike riding makes it like a healing process for you?
I've always done it ever since I was a kid. It was like a way to kind of just zone out, kind of like meditation, you know. So I would grab the bike and just ride, and it kind of just soothes you, you know. You get to not think about anything, just make sure that you're pedaling and make sure that you're going, you know, because you're in that moment. You can't just not pedal, right, if you're cycling. So you're always doing that motion, and it's like a meditative state for me. So I like it.
What about the landscapes?
Oh, yeah, that's just a bonus, man. There's some great landscapes here, mountain ranges everywhere. You got desert scenes. You got forest scenes. You got pretty much any kind of scene you want to look for in a short distance, so you can just drive out there and enjoy it.
So, Freud, what is your contribution to Undocu Talks?
Yeah, so my name is Froilán Orozco, and you all contacted me because of my audio expertise. And I'm really happy to work with this podcast because there's a lot of potential, and I'm looking forward to the future shows.
This has been Undocu Talks. Thank you for tuning in with your hosts, Alejandro,
Nancy,
tu amiga Cindy,
Rafael Martinez,
y Frank Berlanga Medina.
Our next podcast will air on February 26th. And remember, everybody, it's the last Monday of every month.
Follow us at UndocuTalks on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.
Remember, Undocu culture heals. To end the show, we have a strong poem by Julio Molina.
What does college do for a brown brother in the States? I got a degree, I'm free, but I contemplate. They say knowledge is power assimilated to growth. But then we criticize the government and get discriminated as both intelligent and ignorant. And so I put my fist up and start hindering the system, because the pain of them gone is still lingering. I speak loud because I'm proud of my immigrant roots. My dark skin shows it's deeper than the canal of your tooth. I got heart, but it's dark. Mama, where am I? I can't see a thing, but I move forward, living by the motto I stand by. Fuck it. My big cuz said every move from here is up. I'm setting the bar. I'm flying above lights. I guess I'm a star. I got drive, but I'm more efficient than the car. My tank is never on empty. What's my dream at Presidente? Damn, that's far. But the truth is, they're ruthless. I'll probably get deported and killed. But I die proud because I be a brown brother trying to get the truth revealed. You see, DACA was never created to give me a legal status. I'm just able to work. And even though I attended school, I'm still as illegal as my dad is. We are no longer asking for permission. This is where we will stay. And we are not sleeping giants, we are giants wide awake. No more fearing the police, the DHS, Trump, ICE. No more saying, senor, please. We are not your bargaining chips for your higher deportations. And the Dream Act shouldn't just be for DACA, it should be for all 11 million across the nation.